Ensemble Theatre Cincinnati serves a decidedly adult audience with most of its shows, often produced at its Over the Rhine Theatre before they've landed at other theatres across the country. But every year for the holidays, it's a change of pace, a family-friendly musical based on a familiar fairy tale, told with some creative twists. These shows by composer David Kaiser and playwright Joe McDonough have been a holiday staple for nearly two decades now, and several have been revived more than once. This year's production of Sleeping Beauty is, in fact, in its third revival. Here to talk about the show and this wonderful annual gift to Cincinnati families is ETC's producing artistic director, Lynn Myers. Welcome, Lynn.
Thanks for having me here.
If someone saw Sleeping Beauty in 2000 or 2004 mm-hmm. or 2009, should they come back again this year?
Absolutely.
And what will they see if they do that that might differ?
Well, given that we are a theater dedicated to producing new work, there's always been a question of why repeat these shows? Well, one, they're commissioned for Ensemble. So they are world premieres commissioned from Joe and David for ETC. So it's a very special and unique twist that a show can be written for us and our audience. And every time that it is reinvented, it is reinvented. Sleeping Beauty this time around, I think, has had a stronger reinvention than anything of late in that the set is absolutely magnificent. It's this dueling bisque white staircases leading to this precipice. And the cast is all new, with the exception of Deb Girdler, Michael Bath, and Sarah Mackey.
Could you do a holiday show without them in it?
I'm not sure I could. I think there's a rule somewhere in, you know, whoever rules the holidays.
They've all been in them.
That without the three of them, yeah. I cannot do a holiday show. And I'm glad to have them. But when you reinvent the cast and when you reinvent the set, and when David and Joe both came in and did a lot of work in terms of tweaking the script, bringing it contemporary, making the soundtrack even stronger. David does all of this work in that he creates the music, then he records the music. So it's all done from this point of his appreciation and understanding of our audience. And every year that we do this, we get better, I hope. It's something that we look forward to, and I'm just thrilled that it's almost ready to open.
I know. You're sort of like a kid about it yourself.
I am just ecstatic.
So these, you might call them fractured fairy tales, I mm-hmm. think, because they're founded in fairy tales that we're familiar with, but they do more than that, more than just a retelling of the story. In particular, they usually offer sort of some kind of subtle moral that mm-hmm. kids can grasp. Can you talk a little bit about what's the moral this time around with Sleeping
sure.
Beauty?
In Sleeping Beauty, it's all about inner beauty. The thirst for knowledge, the quest, so to speak, since that is the theme of our season, quests. It's about what's inside and what makes you beautiful. And I feel like if we can make the 1,200 kids that see this show for free through our Fairy Godmother program, if we can make them happy and they can leave feeling special, unique, and celebrated, then any tall or small audience that sees it throughout the run should be fine. It is a very strong message about believing in yourself and never being afraid to learn something new. It's about making sure that you fulfill your promise. I think that it's a very special and maybe a little more sophisticated than if you think about Alice in Wonderland or Frog Princess. I think this one has a little more sophistication, certainly to the music, but also to the moral. You have three good fairies and you have one bad fairy, and that sounds really cute, and it is, except when you recognize that the three really good fairies recognize the elements of the earth and the fire and the world and all these powers that nature brings. And the reason the evil fairy doesn't succeed is that she goes against the natural order of things.
Let me ask a question. Some people may think because it's fairy tales, well, this is just for children.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never felt that to be the case. I wonder, could you talk a little bit? Because, well, at least there's humor in it that adults are going to get.
Absolutely.
Contemporary references and things like that. But you've really, I think, put an emphasis on wanting to make sure that this is something that everyone can enjoy.
Absolutely. And David and Joe, in writing it, have made sure that the feeling is multi-generational. It is family friendly. Kids will enjoy it, but grandparents and aunts and uncles and moms and dads will like it too. We have the bulk of our subscribers obviously come throughout our entire season without bringing their kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews along. So For those subscribers that think, I'll pass on this one or give my tickets to somebody else, I hope they don't do that. And I hope the single ticket buyers that came to an Iliad and Hands on a Hard Body will think about Sleeping Beauty because it is really part of a season. There's been a lot of discussion about doing these family-friendly shows at the holidays when you have other family offerings around town. And I've been pretty stubborn about wanting to keep this in our canon because I believe it's important to do something that is creative and written for a multi-generational audience. The music certainly cuts across all generations. You'll hear everything from stuff your kids will remember to things you'll remember.
Just a little footnote also, you run this longer than most of the other holiday shows. You run into that first couple of days of January.
We do.
And I always think, of course, all the holiday shows suddenly feel a little stale once
right.
Christmas is over, but your shows don't.
No, thank you for saying that because this is not Christmas. This is not even holiday material. This is about Sleeping Beauty's journey and her parents' journey and the fairies and the prince and all of that. And that lasts all year long. We could easily do this show in summer. There's no snow even in this one. Snow White had snow in it. This one doesn't have snow in it.
Could you talk a little bit more about working with David and Joe? They've been involved with these for, I think it's like 17 years
Absolutely.
Now.
Yes.
And it's not a matter of them having like created this one back in 2000 or whenever it was. But they're back there with you, shoulder to shoulder with you and your cast, sort of freshening and recreating the shows every time you do them.
They are. And the notes that go out, my stage manager, Brandon Holmes, is amazingly meticulous about giving them, this is what we discovered in rehearsal. So what about this? And so if Joe's not in rehearsal or David's not in rehearsal, they're getting that note, they fix it, they come back the next day, and we have that. And part of the joy of creating a new play is having that connection with the playwright and the composer. And all of this started because when I came back to ETC, there were these pantos that had been going on. And in my opinion, they were not what I thought ETC should be doing. I have no problem with the fact that they did them. But for me, I wanted to create something fresh and new and uniquely ours. So David was a composer that I barely knew. Joe was a playwright I knew fairly well. And it's been a good marriage, so to speak. I think the two of them, when I think about what they've created, not just for ensemble, but now for other theaters around the country and around the city, it's been a good match.
So some of these shows have been picked up by other theaters?
Oh, yes. They've been produced all over. We had a production of Cinderella in Australia. The Frog Princess actually has been done, I think, about 12 times around the country. Actually, one time even by a school over in Northern Kentucky. So it was close to our own hometown. And that was the idea, to give two playwrights, and a composer and playwright, an opportunity to create something that continues to bring them in resources and continues to spread ensembles name for having been the place where these were launched.
This show is going to open later this week, but it's important that I think people should know that you're not just like kicking things off now.
Oh, no.
You mentioned just briefly your Fairy Godmother program. And I think that one of the benefits of that program is that you've already been in front of audiences with this. Could you talk a little more about where that program came from, why you do it, and really who takes advantage of it?
With great pleasure. Many years ago, there was a company member at Ensemble Theater named Jenny Hoffman, and I had the great pleasure of working with her on a production that I came back to ETC to direct long before I ever thought I'd be back in Cincinnati, A Streetcar Named Desire. Jenny was a wonderful actress who died very young. Suddenly, she found out that she was ill, and within 6 months of the diagnosis, she was gone. So David White, who was the originator, the original producing artistic director of Ensemble Theater, thought, what a great way to celebrate her, since she had played the fairy godmother in one of the pantos. What a great way to celebrate her memory, to have a fairy godmother fund. And it started with, I think, about 10, 12 people when I came back here. And now that has grown over the past 18 years to serve over 1,200 kids. And what we do is we accept applications from schools that don't have arts programs. Some of the schools are schools that we reach with our educational outreach program already. So they come. So all of last week, even before Thanksgiving, kids were coming in at 10 o'clock in the morning to see Sleeping Beauty. And they're a tough audience. If we can please that audience, I guarantee you we can please you. So they benefit from it, but that it goes beyond it. It's not just a token holiday gift. It is about following up with artwork and study guides and going into the schools and talking about the moral that we just discussed. It's also about a free performance for our armed forces families and a benefit performance for Children's Law Center. So things that we have been doing now for years. I'm thrilled that it allows the show to grow and take shape, and in this case, bloom a little bit before it officially opens, but we're able to have it on our feet. It just means we rehearse very quickly.
It makes these productions, I think, just one more wonderful holiday gift to Cincinnati. It's great that you do that. Sleeping Beauty opens on Wednesday, and you'll have more than 30 chances to see it before it wraps up on January the 4th. For more information about the show and Ensemble Theater, you can click on the link that you'll find at wvxu.org. My guest tonight has been Ensemble Theater's Lynn Myers. Lynn, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me here.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.